What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hello! Welcome back, everybody. Shout out to my sinners worldwide. Yeah, it's another episode of the podcast, Lead Singer Syndrome, with me, your host, just like every week. My name is Shane Told. It is so great to have you once again, or maybe it's your first time listening. If so, well, extra special welcome. We got a good with a capital G, everybody, episode with one of the best, the nicest guy, I'm just going to say it right there, the nicest guy in punk rock, Mr. Chuck Reagan of Hot Water Music, also of great solo material. I have wanted to have Chuck on this program for a few years now, and he graciously accepted, and man, it's just a great conversation. We go pretty deep, you know, back into his childhood and into, you know, kind of the history of Hot Water Music in a band that means a lot to me personally, influentially. I mean, one of my biggest influences, especially on Silverstein, believe it or not. A band that really changed the rules, I think, of what you were allowed to do in terms of post-hardcore, in terms of punk rock, in terms of emo, and kind of being able to mix these genres together. And just groundbreaking guy and groundbreaking band. So thank you, Chuck, for doing this. This is good. Sit back. Buckle up, if you will. This is going to be one of the best, I assure you. Before we get to that, some show business to take care of. You can always email me if you're aware of that. It's leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. Pretty easy. Follow me on social media at Shane Told. The Lead Singer Syndrome accounts are Lead Singer Syndrome on Instagram and Lead Singer Sin, S-Y-N, on Twitter, if you like those. We do have a Facebook account also that Neil and Julia run, and they do a fantastic job. And I know Facebook is, well, it's a little last decade, isn't it? But go on there. We post stuff pretty often, and it's still a thing. So check out our Facebook page. And if you want to help out the show, this thing's always going to be free. Don't worry about that. But if you do enjoy it, if you do want to throw me a bone, the best way to do that is to join the All Access Club. And pretty much how it works is you throw in a little bit of extra cash every month on a Patreon page, and you get a whole bunch of stuff in return. Bonus episodes, bonus content, interaction with me, interaction with other fans of the show, merchandise. I do Q&As every month, among a whole bunch of other things. And like I said, it is what keeps this thing free. It is what keeps the lights on around here, so to speak, with all, you know, the expenses and stuff that goes into doing this sort of thing. So yeah, check it out. The link is leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. And yeah, it starts as little as $6 a month. So yeah, it's just a good time. We have a really, really great community. 400 people now, I think it is. It's really, really beautiful. And you will meet some friends, I guarantee it. So I just ask that you check it out. Again, the link is leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. I don't know if you tuned in last week. We had a really, really special show. I went to Los Angeles. Fearless Records had me out for their huge 25th anniversary celebration. I was at their pop-up shop with a really, really great podcast talking to Vic from Pierce the Veil, Aaron from Under Oath, and Telly from The Word Alive. I also spoke to Eric from I Prevail. I think that's going to be out next week. So hit the subscribe button. That's a really good one as well. But I really want to thank Fearless just for having me and believing in me and believing in this show and what I do, you know, as a, I don't know, an interviewer or kind of a fake journalist. I mean, whatever it is that I do, you know, I'm just a singer of a band that started a podcast. And I guess after 4 years of this, I've gotten good enough that people have noticed and want to fly me out to these events. So Fearless Records is awesome. And just thank you so much to Heather and everyone over there for being the best. What else? Oh, yes, my band Silverstein, we're starting our huge 20th anniversary celebration extravaganza starting this weekend in London, UK. Two sold-out shows in London. We're really excited about that. Then we're going to Germany for a bunch of shows. They're mostly sold out, too. I believe that there's tickets left in Frankfurt and Munich. So if you're in that neck of the woods, check it out. Then we have a short break, and we're coming to America and Canada. So, yes, go get your tickets for those shows. They're going fast. New York is sold out. Toronto is sold out. Montreal is sold out. Anaheim's going fast. LA's going fast. So check it out. The link for all that is Silverstein20.com. And we have great support. In Europe, in the UK, we have Hawthorne Heights, our old buddies coming out. And in the States, we have 4 Year Strong and I the Mighty. So lots of cool stuff to see. We'll be performing 3 sets. Yeah, that you can hear it in my voice a little bit. We've been practicing. I'm excited for the challenge. So please, please check it out. I cannot wait. Well, anyway, let's get to it. Here's my conversation with the almighty Chuck Reagan. I need a remedy of diesel and dust. Something I can taste with a fix I can trust. Another high, more potent than lust.
Hello, Chuck.
Hey, Chuck. It's Shane. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well, Shane. How are you? Thanks for calling.
No, thanks for answering. I've heard that sometimes you space on interviews a little bit, which I am right there with you, man.
Yeah, you know, there's you get the that calendar usually looks like a quilt. So
no, I the amount of times I've picked up the phone and hello. It was like, oh, hi, I'm calling about the interview. Oh, yeah, you know, I know what's going on. You just have to lie right through your teeth that you remembered. But I do appreciate you taking the time to do this, man. And I've been doing this podcast for like over 4 years. You've been kind of a guy I've wanted to whose brain I've wanted to pick for a long time. So I really do appreciate you doing this. And
oh man, I'm honored.
First of all, though, I mean, I'm 25 years. First of all, I mean, that's what a milestone. The ups and downs have been unbelievable, but the fact that you are here doing this still, it must be a pretty amazing feeling.
It is, man. I feel really lucky. I feel like, you know, I haven't been doing much different than many, many of my friends who are out there doing it just as long, if not longer, some of mm-hmm. them. And, you know, we worked hard. We made a lot of sacrifices like all of us do when right. it comes to working independently and kind of putting our whole being into something, you know, that we believe in. It's still going, you know, and I feel yeah. lucky, but, you know, I will say, like, you know, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't, you know, for our friends and family and, you know, the supporters that have been there. you know, from start up to now. You know, that's like it really does. I know it sounds a little cliche, but it really does take a village, you know.
Yeah, well, it's interesting
to make something like this happen.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that. That you say, "Oh, I don't know what makes me different." And I'll tell you what makes you different, Chuck. We got a tour opening for Hot Water Music back 2004, and it was, you know, you guys being one of our favorite bands, a huge influence on all of us. I mean, especially Billy. You know, we were so excited, and you know, we'd done other support tours where, like, you know, the headlining bands kind of up their own ass a little bit, and you know, like, they don't really talk to the opening bands. And you know, you personally, Chuck, you were just so warm and friendly. Up until that point, you were the nicest headlining, you know, front man I'd ever met.
Oh, man.
I don't mean to toot your horn too hard, but seriously, I think that makes a big difference, and that goes a long way. And, you know, I'm looking at your tour dates here, and the fact that you're able to get, like, you're pulling fucking bands out of retirement, dude, to open for you. You know, I mean, Ann Beretta, I don't know if Ann Beretta's been doing shows lately. I haven't heard that name in a while. Strike Anywhere, they've been gone. The Full Blast is coming back just to do those Canadian dates. I mean, that is the difference, man. You ask that question. Oh. That's the difference.
Well, blame my mama. My dad. You know, I don't know, man. I was raised to just treat people the way you want to be treated, and you know, I'm not a nice guy all the time, I don't think. You know, I have my grumpy moments.
Well, who is, really?
But yeah, man. I always, you know, growing up, listening to bands, admiring bands, and you know, meeting some of them that didn't meet those expectations.
Yeah,
just heartbreaking.
Yeah,
heartbreak. Yeah. You know, it's like, man, you know, to the point where I couldn't listen to those records for a while or ever again.
It's brutal. You got anyone you want to call out at this time?
No, I don't.
I had to try.
Yeah, but
high road. Chuck's always taking the high road. I know.
It is. It's frustrating and you know, so disappointing when you know you admire, you know, admire someone, admire a band or an artist, you know, and you meet them and it's just a drag.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it just drops all the wind out of the sail, you know, and, you know, I had a couple of those moments, you know, growing up where I, you know, I definitely kind of vowed, like, man, if I ever get to that point, somebody knock me off my rock. Thank you so much. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I just never wanted to, to be that way. Yeah, oh. Excuse me. I just had to run in and grab a burrito real quick.
Oh, no, that's that sounds amazing.
but yeah, you know, so in doing that, I mean, it was kind of the scene we grew up in was very, you know, very personable, you know, very outgoing. And, you know, we didn't come from a scene or a circle where the band was any different than the people who paid to see the show.
Yeah,
because
I know
the next night we were the ones paying to see the show and hanging out with whoever it was.
I know, man. I literally remember it was the same. You know, I grew up just outside Toronto, and in our scene too, like, I would be playing a show with my band, and before we went on, I'd be moshing to the band before. You know, I mean, that was the way it was, and it didn't matter. It didn't matter, like, fashion and all that shit. It didn't matter. It really was about the music and about the songs and about the community.
100%.
And what's cool about that, though, is like, you know, Gainesville, Florida is known for just an incredible scene and still is with the fest, you know, every year. It's an incredible thing, and it's a place you maybe wouldn't expect that to happen. But I mean, that's the same place I grew up in, Oakville, Ontario. You know, it wasn't Toronto, and Gainesville wasn't, you know, Orlando, and none of them were New York or L.A.
Right. Well, you're right. You're right. I mean, it's a testament that, and I look at this way, and I've looked at everything this way for a long time, you know, since I was a kid. It's like, it's your choice what you want your environment, your atmosphere, and your scene to be. Like, we make it, you know?
Yeah.
If you're not, you know, if there's any young kids out there, like, listening to this, and you're not happy with where you live, you got two options. Like, you either leave or you make it the way that you think it should be.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
You build it. And, you know, you hear a lot of these towns like that, you know, that it doesn't seem like a, you know, Gainesville, Florida, like Central Florida, you know, but it's been the way that it is because of what people do to build it that way. It doesn't just happen. Like, people have to want it. And I mean, but I can't stress that enough. You know, I look at it, it's funny because, you know, here now years later, I'm in, you know, in Northern California. And I'm a, you know, when I'm home for work, I'm a fishing guide. That's what I do. I take people fishing. That's my job. And I mean, I'm on the water probably 180 days a year. And, you know, for a long time, me and some other buddies were kind of looking at what we had out our back door, and it just wasn't getting the recognition and the hype that we felt like it deserved. We have some amazing fisheries, some beautiful places.
Yeah.
And, you know, I talked to a friend of mine, who is a guide. He owns and runs Schultz Outfitters out of Ypsilanti, Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And those guys kill it up there. You know, they do a heck of a job. They run an incredible program. And I was talking to him about, you know, how it all came to be. And, because it's kind of another one of those, I mean, now it's funny. We went from music to fishing.
That's okay. I'm all right with the, going back and forth.
To me, it's the same, because it's not even about people are doing. It's more about the work ethic and the mindset that I'm talking about.
Totally.
You know? So, you know, these guys, you know, realize that, man, we have all these incredible fisheries and these incredible opportunities around us, when the people that live in our town are flying to the Bahamas or flying, you know, like somewhere else.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, that's cool. But hey, look around, you know?
That's right.
Have it all right here.
Yeah, that's the classic grass is always greener, I mean, mentality that we have, which not right.
But I mean, Schultz said it best, and it was funny because, like, he was talking about fishing, but this totally relates to what we're talking about.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, man, if you don't like your scene, change it.
Yeah.
And I mean, that or leave. And
but did you know that Gainesville was so special, like, back in the early 90s? Like, you're a kid, you know, I have read, you know, you skateboarding and, you know, doing shit and playing music, whatever.
Yeah.
Did you know that what you had, like, with you guys and, like, you know, Less Than Jake and all the other bands, that was something that was going to be talked about in terms of punk rock, like, worldwide?
No, I mean, when we moved there, because we heard there was a lot of house shows. I'm not even kidding. that was it. And, like, honestly, when we moved there, George and I, we had a plan where we were going to live there for a year and move again. And we just wanted to travel around and move around.
Yeah.
And we were like, oh, we'll live in Gainesville for a while. Then maybe we'll move to North Carolina and then to New York. And then we'll just make our way. You know?
That's one way. Yeah, that's one way to gain a following, I guess.
We knew it was special coming from where we were coming from. We tried to do exactly what we're talking about in our little town in Sarasota.
Yeah.
We would rent VFW halls and little places and kind of have shows, you know, not George and I personally, but people in our scene, you know. And it made it better for sure. You know, but we wanted more, you know, and like, we just wanted more shows. We heard all these crazy stories, you know, from, Spoke and Radon and the bands that were happening, you know, up in Gainesville. And, we moved up there, met Pat Hughes, who ran Shaft Records, and met Sean Bonner, who ran Toy Box and Var.
Yeah,
no idea.
Of course.
And then they had the hardback. You know, Alan Bushnell owned and ran the hardback, and the hardback was our CBGBs. You know,
yeah,
that was our you know. That's where it all went down, you know?
Yeah.
Or one of the many house shows that was around, but like the hardback was kind of that was the place. And we would hear about all these stories and, you know, Gulf raised, kids, suburban kids who are just like, you know, wanting to get out and turn up and rock
you talk about your parents. You already brought them up, you know. You're talking about your mom and your dad raising you right, and I'm sorry to hear about your dad passing away last year.
That's very kind of you to say, man.
But well, geez, I mean, you're never prepared for that. But your dad was professional golfer on the PGA Tour, Ryder Cup player. I mean, that's an interesting upbringing. Not everyone's dad is a professional athlete or golfer, in Sarasota, Florida. And that's a whole different thing, because with golf and the etiquette, especially back then, you know, you're talking about very uppity country club people coming around. So what was it like when you decided... Well, it
to
was,
paint
I mean,
my fingernails black.
Yeah. It was kind of like, fuck you, mom and dad. This is punk. And I heard the stories about you literally, like you were not a good kid.
No. And you know, I look back, I can't ever have any regrets, because I love where I'm standing right now, you know? And, I love my wife. I love my son. I love where I live. I love what we've done. You know, we've made a ton of mistakes and, you know, we've hurt our parents and family along the way. We've neglected family along the way, neglected friends along the way to sacrifice for this band. And, but at the end of the day, I'm truly appreciative and love where I am. So I can't really have any regrets. You know what I mean? But, growing up in we grew up in so many different facets of life and almost different standards. My mama is a Cajun woman, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And on my mom's side of the family, you know, her mom and dad were rice and crawfish farmers, you know, dirt, just about as dirt poor as when she was younger as could be, you know? And my papa's parents, you know, I mean, I heard all the stories from mama, how her parents couldn't stand him. They literally lived on a dirt floor. They had a house that was just walls and a roof and like a dirt floor, you know. And wow. And then, you know, on my dad's side, complete opposite. You know, my grandfather on my dad's side was a dentist. He was a golfer.
Yep.
Very kind of high class, you know, Florida. He was from Tennessee originally, but my dad was born in Daytona. You know, yeah, you know, so, and my dad went to the golf course when he was 8 years old. And I mean, he never really left. I'm serious. Like he wasn't really one of those kids that, you know, played a lot of baseball, or, you know, he played a little bit when he was little. And, you know, he wasn't running around in the woods playing army like we were doing. He was at the golf course.
Yeah.
Since he was 8 years old. And that's what made him the pro, you know, that he became.
How's your swing, Chuck?
Oh, you know, I had a great teacher, you know.
Oh, right. Well, your brother, too. Your brother played pretty seriously, too, or still does, right?
Yeah, I have one brother who's a pro down in Florida, Dave Reagan Jr.
Yeah.
And then my younger brother, Paul Reagan, is, man, that dude is just a ringer, man. That guy, if he would have just applied himself a little bit more in that field, he would have gone really far with golf.
Yeah.
And yeah. And he's still, I mean, he's the kind of dude that won't play for a year and just go out and smoke everybody.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
He's good at everything. He's my hero, you know.
Wow.
But yeah, it was kind of weird. So when we would go to my grandparents, it was just all about fishing and hunting and getting dirty and playing in the woods and playing in the swamp and, like, you know, frogging,
you know,
like, yeah, Cajun living. And then when that was my mama and papa on my mom's side. And then when we'd go to my grandparents on my dad's side, it would be in Florida, yeah, right on the intercoastal. And we were still fishing a lot, but we were playing golf. We were surfing. You know, our feet were a little cleaner.
That's an interesting, like, duality of growing up and seeing. I mean, maybe it's good to see both sides and not be, you know, because there's. Oh, 100%. I mean, I know. I'm sure you've stayed in Hilton's and you've stayed on, maybe not quite dirt floors, but pretty fucking close.
I've stayed on my share of dirt floors.
There you go. So, you know, that prepared you for both of those things, you know?
Yeah. But, you know, I found skateboarding at an early age, and, you know, that's what, like many of us, you know, that's where I found punk rock. That's where I found rock and roll. You know, I wasn't allowed to listen to, you know, any kind of rock and roll or even the radio. You know, like, my parents would be out of the house and I would turn the radio on.
Wow. You know? How did you start playing guitar? Like, did that come after, or that something that your parents were cool with?
No, they were kind of cool with. I had a guitar at an early age, but I never took it serious. I just jumped on the bed with it, you know. Like, I'm talking when I was like 8, 9, you know, 10. And then when I got into skateboarding and got into listening to music, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to play loud. I begged my parents for a guitar. They finally broke down, bought me this little set, you know,
yeah,
like electric guitar with the tiny amp and the cord and a chord book and whatever. Yeah. And brought it home and just cranked up all the knobs. I was, this was when I remember I didn't even know that you had to press down on the strings to make a note or a chord.
I didn't understand that part either when I first got a guitar. Yeah.
I just cranked it all up. I started raging on that thing, and they let me go for a little bit, but they barged in and they picked up that whole set, and I never saw it again.
Really? Actually?
Yeah. They like took me to the store, bought it. We went home. I started ripping on it, and they took it away. you know, man, I was just disgusted by it all. But when I look back on it, what was pretty sweet and tells a lot about my parents is I came home from school one day and there was an acoustic guitar leaning up against the wall. So they were still supportive, just in their own way.
Yeah, in their own sanity. Yeah, for the loudness. No, I go, like, I think about my bands, like my high school bands, like playing. Like, my parents were cool with it, so we would play in my parents' house, and the whole house shaking. My parents upstairs trying to watch Jeopardy or something. Like, I don't know how they were cool with that. Like, mad respect. Do you remember the first song or riff you ever learned on a guitar?
Oh, that's a good question, man. Let me think. It might have been Sitting on the Dock of the Bay.
Okay. Nice. That's okay.
I had a buddy that, one of my dad's golf buddies, you know, who he played with, worked at the club with. He was the assistant pro. His name was Roy Ridenour. And he was a songwriter and apparently, you know, traveled around and lived in the back of his truck and lived in Nashville for a while, tried to do it up, you know, and he was called by golf, you know, so he kind of gave that up and went to golf, but he used to come over for dinner and show me chords and, cool. you know, sit around and play. And he'd play like stuff like that. He'd play old, you know, Towns Van Zandt or Dylan songs or, you know, whatever country songs, and he played all kinds of stuff. And it didn't matter if it was what my parents would call like secular music, you know, because it was Roy and it was an acoustic guitar. So
it didn't matter.
He would play like, you know, all kinds of stuff, you know, you know, I definitely learned little things from him that changed my world. And then it was my buddy, my brother, Christian Prather, who plays in a band called the Green Goblin Project. He plays in a bunch of stuff, but Green Goblin Project. And him and I, you know, hooked up at a real early age, you know, after my parents took my electric guitar away. And I would go over to his house and we'd sit around and give each other homemade tattoos and listen to Misfits and, you know, whatever. And he was the one who taught me how to play a bar chord.
That's the game changer right there.
Total game changer, man. Blew my mind. I'm like, what? I can just go.
Yeah,
I can
move it up and down.
I don't even have to change my fingers. I just slide. Oh, and, blew my mind.
Yeah. I love that. That's a great story. I got to say, man, the fact that Sitting on the Dock of a Bay was the first song you learned to play on guitar, isn't that your whole life, like, just coming right together? You know what I mean? 180 days fishing, 180 days playing guitar. It's like, it's just perfect.
I guess so, yeah.
Oh, man, that's absolutely wild. So I want to talk about some of the stuff you're doing. I mean, you got all these shows coming up. You're you know, 25 years and you're highlighting two records, No Division and Caution for the milestone. Was that a difficult choice to kind of single those ones out?
We kind of let the people choose, man.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we all had, it was one of those things of when we started talking about doing it, we had no idea what to play.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, we're like, all right, we still got to pick. We got to pick, you know, what are we going to play? 19 songs, 20 songs, you know, and how many do we have? Like, I'm not really sure right now.
Probably at least 120, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was kind of, you know, well, what are we choosing? Yeah, we asked around and talked to a lot of friends and you know, supporters, And yeah, it kind of came down to like No Division and Caution were like the two records that, you know, most people wanted to hear.
You guys playing some additional tracks too, like play the record, come back? Because like I can't imagine going to see you guys and not, for 25th year anniversary, not hearing Turnstile, you know, like that's like started it all, kind of, at least in my opinion, first song I ever heard.
That's
you know,
awesome.
It's hard, but it's hard, right? Because you start, you play whole albums and then some of the songs beat out the other songs that maybe shouldn't just because they happen to be on the album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's wild, you know. I mean, any band that has been around for a while and kind of has a bunch of songs in the catalog, like, you forget about songs. Like, you lose them, you know?
Yeah.
And doesn't mean they're good or bad or you know, not worth playing. It's just, you kind of, you get in these modes where, you know, you're just, for some reason, every record you put out, you know, there's like a handful of songs that you start playing right away. And then that gets kind of whittled down to, you know, a few songs. And then for some bands, it comes down to where you don't play, you may play one or you don't play any of the songs off of that one record.
Yeah.
And it's just because you have all this other material you're either excited about, or maybe at some point, you know, people gravitated a little more towards, you know, I don't know. It's
hard when it is hard when you start getting like how many records, you know, Hot Water Music has, or my band has, like, you know, 8-9 records, and there's songs that slip through the cracks. It's like, it's someone will be like, oh, why didn't you play that song? And you're like, I don't know why. I don't have an answer. Like, you know, that song's as good as, or maybe in some cases better than other ones. It's just, for some reason, it never saw its, had its day in the sun. And then, you know, once in a while you have the idea, oh, we're going to, you know what, that track 9, that's a really good song on whatever record, we're going to play it. And then you play it and no one gives a shit. And you're like, we should have played the other song. Because when you start playing songs live, I don't know if it's like because people look up set lists or they see you play the song live and then they go see, it's good, so they want to see it the next time. But like it happens to where, you know, the song's kind of, it's self-perpetuating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I mean, there's definitely songs that we've written where, you know, we're all like, yeah, we won't play that.
Right.
There's always clunkers, you know, in the catalog.
Are you playing the albums in full at least?
Yeah. Yeah. We play the albums from start to finish. Yeah. And then we just play a bunch of stuff. Old, new, like whatever.
Yeah. I had this guy, Our Lady Peace singer. His name is Rain. I don't know if you know Our Lady Peace. They're a very, very big deal in Canada. Kind of like a radio band, but they play like arenas up here. And I was talking to him. I think they were doing their 20th or 25th anniversary for one of their tours. And I said, so how's it playing, like these songs? And he goes, oh, well, we don't play all of them. Like, you don't? It's like, there's like three. No way. I'm not playing those. They're terrible. I'm like, okay, well, you can make your own rules, I guess, if you really want to.
Yeah.
But anyways, where am I going next with this? I guess, you know, I want to talk a little bit about your relationship with your other bandmates and how it's been up and down. You know, you guys kind of breaking off from them for a little while, whenever that was, almost 15 years ago, I guess. And them forming the Draft, you doing the solo stuff, you guys kind of coming back together in this way. It's like a lot of times there's that cliche, you know, oh, we're like brothers, but you guys really do seem like a family more than just about any other band I can think of.
100%, man. You know, I love these guys with all my heart, and like we have, you know, but just like any other family, like we fight like brothers too.
Yeah.
You know, we don't fist fight anymore, but we used to. Like we really did, you know, I mean, like we'd straight up throw down in the parking lot. and then somebody would step in, try to break it up, and then we would team up and go. We'd be like, This is between us. Leave us. We're brothers. just lunatics, just dumb. But yeah, I mean, we've been through quite a bit all together, you know, and we've all seen each other, you know, at our highest highs and lowest lows.
Yeah.
And, you know, we made a decision, you know, a good while ago that we're just never going to break up, that we're not one of those bands and we have no reason to break up.
Right.
You know, unless somebody, you know, kicks the bucket or decides that they don't want the band to go on anymore.
Right.
You know, and that was the deal. It's like, if one of us decides they don't want the band to go on anymore, we're done. And it's fine. It's fine. 'Cause we've had a great run and made a lot of, you know, wonderful memories and experiences in all these communities across the world. And, you know, I mean, and we've already broken up.
I was gonna call you out on that, but I thought I'd just let it go.
The first time, and it was probably the smartest decision. It really made us. It solidified everything that this band sings about and lives and breathes. Is, you know, when we broke up that first time over in Europe, you know, we were just burnt. We were burnt out. Mm-hmm. You know, we went super hard, super fast right away and burn ourselves out. And, you know, made a lot of sacrifices. You know, people were losing relationships, losing dogs, losing places to live, coming home homeless, like losing vehicle, like straight up losing vehicles.
Yep.
I don't know how, but we did. Like, we just, yeah, like, we're like, where's my car? Like, literally.
Jeez.
I don't know.
It's, like, well, and, go ahead. Yeah.
We definitely hit a point where we weren't having fun and it exploded in our face, while we were on tour in Europe. It got real nasty and we had like a couple weeks of tour left. And, you know, it got nasty and then we all kind of took a breather and sat down late one night, talked about the reality of, all right, well, you know, I guess that's it, you know, and then we said, let's sleep on it. You know, everybody had a little to drink and we're like, let's have breakfast tomorrow and talk about this for real. And that next morning, that breakfast to me was the defining moment. Like, it's what made Hot Water Music, you know, what we have always been and what we are today. We decided that it was way more important to stay friends than to be a band. And we said that to each other, you know, and we all shook on it. We got up, we hugged, and we decided to finish the tour because that's what we came to do. And that was our job. And we played the rest of the tour as a broke up band. And which was,
but nobody knew, right? You didn't tell anybody.
Kind of comical when I look back. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. 'Cause we would get up and we were playing in these cities that we'd never been to before, playing for people we've never been to, saying that this was going to be our last show in that town ever.
And, that's a bit of a bum out.
I know, right? Like, come on, man. And yeah, we ended up going home and everybody kind of split and just said, all right, we did it. And what's next? And I think we were probably, you know, we were apart for just like 2 or 3 months. And Var from No Idea wanted to record one last show and put out a live record.
Yeah.
And just for the, since we hadn't been playing, we said, all right, let's get together and record, you know, practice for this show that would later become Live at the Hardback.
Yep.
And we got together and practiced and we ended up writing 2 songs. and we're just hanging out. And we're like, what are we doing?
Oh, you know? Man.
And then that's when we realized, like, okay, maybe not so hard and fast.
There you go. There you go.
And let's get smarter about it. So, and that's also when we all kind of made a decision, like, hey, if we're going to do this, let's go all in and just let's do it. Let's do this. Let's be this band. And, you know, let's be fair to each other and go kick some ass, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, that decision was important, you know, because we were at a point where, you know, we weren't making enough money on shows to support ourselves or do anything at home, much less anybody else. And, you know, and we weren't home enough to hold down any kind of decent job.
That's the problem. Yeah.
So we were like stuck in this like limbo for a little bit until we just threw all in and said, all right, here we go. You know, let's do it. And
yeah,
and everything kind of changed. But, you know, as it all went on, you know, and then we had another kind of hiatus. Not kind of, we had a 3-year hiatus. when I hit a wall, you know, yeah. we had the whole team of, you know, management and booking agent, businessman and all this. And like, you know, it was at a time where I started to get burnt. And, you know, it seems like it went around the whole camp. There was always, it happened to somebody, you know, where somebody would just burn out.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's understandable over this many years. I mean, with Chris Woolard, you know, Chris Cresswell, you know, good friend of mine. I've known him since we were like little kids, you know, growing up in the Toronto area. I mean, he's done an amazing job, but you know, Chris Woolard, I know he's had some health problems and he's not with you guys doing these shows. I mean, that must be, I mean, hard to do this without him. I mean, him being so important, obviously.
It would be super hard if Cresswell wasn't there.
Yeah.
And I can honestly say, I don't know if I'd be doing it if Cresswell wasn't there.
Yeah.
I really don't. I really, truly, truly don't. Like, you know, when all that went down and, you know, we were on our way to Gainesville Fest in October 2017. And I was at a gas station next to the airport. And George called me about, you know, 2.5 hours before I was going to get on a plane. And, George was like, Waller's not playing. And, you know, my first thought was worry, you know, like what's wrong.
Yeah.
But nobody knew, you know, nobody really understood. He just said he couldn't play. And, you know, as we do, we had to respect that and go, okay, well, what do we do now? You know, and just like we'd done in the past when, you know, there was one time where Jason couldn't make a show we were overseas. And, you know, we ended up playing as a 3-piece. I played bass, which was absolutely terrible.
There's no way you know those bass lines.
Oh no. And I knew that. And I was like, you know, I didn't, I mean, we ended up knocking on a hotel room door, cause we knew this other band. I wish I could remember the name of the band, and borrowed their bass so I could practice.
Oh my goodness.
And I practiced till my fingers were raw.
Oh.
And I was like, I can do this. I'm going to do this. I'm just going to play root notes.
Yep.
I'm just going to beat it up and we're just going to rip it. And, you know, right before the show, and it was like Groz Rock, big show.
Oh, really? Oh, my goodness.
Flogging Molly was there, Bad Religion, I think. Bunch of, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And we had a good spot. So the tent was like jam packed. And, you know, I got kind of nervous. You
know? Yeah, like, that's understandable.
You know, I'll have a beer or two that turned into like 15. You know,
it's easy to do in Europe. Yeah,
Yeah. By the time I went up there, I wasn't nervous, but I was hammered and couldn't do anything. So it was pretty awful. but yeah, you know, we decided to, you know, when I was talking to George, we decided to play as a three piece, and we were like, oh, well, who else is there? We got a bunch of buddies in town. Let's just get some friends to come up, sing a song or play a song, and we'll make it just like a fun thing, you know?
Yeah.
And do our best. We're announced, we're going, flights are booked. And Black and I started talking. We're like, man, Flatliners are there, Cresswell. I'm like, he sings, he plays guitar. You know, we're all friends.
Yeah.
And we hit him up, and Cresswell's response was like, are you kidding me? I already know like five songs.
Of course he does. Yeah, of course.
And man, that badass sat behind stage before we played after Flat set, and he learned like a few more songs and just got up and just killed it.
Yeah.
And the three of us looked at each other like, wow, like
what a guy.
Like, we're, you know, obviously we're bummed, sad, confused, all the feels, you know, like, I don't know what's going on, but that was badass. And then, the next night they had another show, and so did Hot Water. And instead of going out partying late, you know, Cresswell ended up back in his hotel room and learned like five other songs.
Wow.
And
yeah.
So the next night we played a full set with him on deck the whole time. And after that show, I told him, I said, look, man, you know, we have no idea what's going on. And I don't even know if we're going to play shows. We don't know. We don't know anything. But if we do, and it doesn't impose on the Flat schedule, and, you know, we don't want to ruffle any feathers. We have full respect for everybody. You know, just told him flat out, like, we want you on board if you're down, you know? Wow. And,
been a beautiful thing. I saw you guys play one of those, whatever it was, I guess last summer in Europe, we played some stuff together, and he's amazing.
Oh, he's amazing.
And what's crazy too is like, so, you know, and I wanted to ask you about, we've been going on, man. I can't believe we've been talking for 45 minutes, but, you know, I wanted to ask you about your vocals and your style and just, you know, that's the thing people hear when they hear Hot Water music is your vocal and also Chris's, you know, Willard's, style. But it's funny how Cresswell just did it.
Yeah,
he just somehow just sings like Willard. It's like it's kind of scary almost.
Yeah, he does, but brings his own style and his own fire. And you know, we got a lot of friends out there, man, who've been coming to see us play for over a couple decades, you know. And these are our family, you know. These are people that have been around. And somebody that's not afraid to walk up to you and go, that sucked. Like, you guys were not so good tonight. and you know, we're all close enough, you know, they're straight shooters. And I tell you, you know, we got a lot of friends who, you know, Wallard's their brother too. And they get it. They understand. And they've come up and just been like, you know what? And all my good friends call him Other Chris.
Yeah, of course.
That's like his nickname's Other Chris. And for a short while, it was New Chris.
Yeah.
But that's gone. Now it's Other Chris.
Yeah.
Or just Cresswell. And, you know, the dude's in the band. I mean, he's been playing with us since October of 2017. A lot of people don't realize that it's been that long, but it has. And I'll say this too, man.
Yeah, go ahead. Like,
we love Wallard. We miss him. You know, I would love to see him come back one day, you know. I don't know if it's going to happen. You know, it doesn't seem like it right now at all, to be honest. But 100% supportive and on board and loves what we're doing. Him and Cresswell are good buds. And
yeah. Like, well, and, what about the future of music? I mean, like, right, like, are we going to get a new Hot Water Music album? Is Cresswell going to be involved? Is Waller, are you, are the five of you going to work on it together? Or is that the plan?
That's the game plan. Yeah.
Yeah. You know? I think it sounds amazing.
So, yeah. It would be beautiful. You know, I mean, I wanted Cresswell involved on the last two records we did, mm-hmm. you know? And you know, I mean, he's been there and, you know, he was real at Cresswell's been apprehensive, you know?
Well, it's kind of like one of those things you don't want to come in and spoil the sauce, I guess, you know, especially if it's one of your favorite bands, you know?
Yeah. But he was definitely, you know, I don't know if that dude really understands how special he really is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, but I said it once already. I'm not kidding. Like, you know, it's so much more than just his playing ability, his stamina and everything, but just his overall attitude and his energy, you know, off the stage at the airport, you know, in the van, in the bus, like we just love him. We love being around him and love, you know, he's just wonderful to have in the atmosphere and to be in his atmosphere, you know.
Gotta get him on the show. I don't know how I haven't had him on the show yet.
I don't know.
Yeah. He's been talked about like that by so many people. You know, so if you're listening to this, Cresswell, come give me a call. Come on. We have some lots of things to talk about.
Yeah.
So a couple more things. I don't want to take up more of your time, but I do want to ask you just a couple quick things. I want to ask you about, first of all, what's going on next? Are you, after this is done, are you going to be doing some solo stuff, new Hot Water Music record? What's the plan next?
Yeah.
And also, I had a few fan questions, and a lot of them were asking about the Revival tour.
Yeah.
You know, that was your baby. Very cool. A lot of people wondering what happened to it and if it's going to come back.
Sure. Yeah, I'm in the studio right now.
Oh, you are.
I'm writing a new record. It's going to be on Rise Records, and you might be the first person I'm telling that to.
Oh, cool. I mean, thanks for the exclusive
and whatnot, but we haven't made any public announcement.
When you say you mean Chuck Reagan or you mean Hot Water?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Todd Bean and I have been writing some songs. We're going to be recording with Ryan Williams, who recorded The Flame and the Flood. He recorded Light It Up. He recorded Shake Up the Shadows. He does a lot of the Ship Thieves stuff. He's one of our buddies who runs Black Bear Studios in Gainesville. So
nice.
We'll be working with him. Pre-production starts early February. Going to start cutting the record mid-March. So
maybe out in the summer?
We'll see, man. That's not my, I don't make that decision.
Right.
That's not my, I'm just trying to make some songs and have some fun
cool.
And make some good recordings.
When you sit down to write a song, and I just have this question to you about songwriting, I assume your approach starts with an acoustic guitar and, you know, maybe humming a melody or something. Do you write based on a project you're about to do, or do you just write a song and then you kind of say, maybe that'll be a Hot Water Music song. Maybe that's a solo song. Maybe that's for something else.
That's a good question. Like some of them definitely like reveal themselves right away.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, okay, that goes in that folder, you know? you know, some of them are, you know, I mean, most of the time when I write, it just, there's no rhyme or reason. It's just like sit down and got something on my mind or on my brain or, you know, just like just need to vent, you know?
There you go.
And, you know, that's what it's always been good for me for, you know, is just that therapy aspect of it all. And in that way, you know, I don't plan to write anything anyway. It's just that's what's happening. That's what I'm hearing or what I'm feeling at the moment. And, you know, a lot of the times exactly that, it kind of starts with acoustic, a melody, you know, maybe a phrase or two, and then just filling in the blanks from there, you know.
Absolutely, man. Well, dude, hey, thank you so much for your time, speaking with me and being just so honest and just you gave me what I wanted, Chuck. It was perfect. So thank you.
Right on, buddy.
Last question. Yeah. Have you ever been ice fishing?
I have not, and it's a bucket list thing, dude.
You got to do it.
I've always wanted to do it, and yeah, one of these days. One of these days, I'm going to make it happen.
All right, man. Well, have a great rest of your afternoon, and can't wait to hear the next thing, and have fun in Canada on those shows.
All right. Thanks, man. I really appreciate your support.
Oh,
and to answer your question about Revival real quick.
Oh, yeah,
We did something recently. Dave Hawes and Dan Andriano and myself, we went out and we did a show that benefited Cast Hope, an organization I work with, that takes underserved kids out into the outdoors. And that was really cool. And, you know, I get a lot of responses from that too. You know, I get a lot of people, and that tour, you know, it kind of dissolved for a little bit, mostly because, man, my wife and I were funding everything. And, it was just insanely expensive and hard to put together, keep together.
Yeah.
We lost an absurd amount of money over 7 years that we did it. Don't regret it. You know, we have, you know, had made some beautiful shows happen and met some incredible songwriters that have become just lifelong friends. And, you know, yeah, man, I would love to see it happen again. I'm not sure. There was a little while where we were talking about, you know, turning it into a festival.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure right now. You know, it may be one of those things where you may see it pop up here.
Cool.
And there.
I hope so. I hope so. All right, Chuck. All right. Well, thanks so much, man. And enjoy the rest of your day.
Okay. Thanks, buddy.
All right, man.
You take care.
Yeah. Take care now. Bye. So there it is with Mr. Chuck Reagan, a legend and such a sweetheart. And it was so great to have him on the show. And I know, you know, I do have quite a few punk rock guests. You know, if you guys know, you guys listen to this, that's my shit. That's the music that I truly love, that I grew up on. And we have a guest coming up. I'm not sure if it's going to be in 2 or 3 weeks. But we have a punk rock legend, and I don't want to tell you who it is yet, but I was so excited to do this conversation. So if you're into this kind of music, if you're into punk rock, maybe it's the first time, you know, you've checked out this podcast, go back. I've spoke to Joey Cape of Lagwagon, Fat Mike of NoFX, Tim from Rise Against, a vast list of punk rockers. So hit the subscribe button. You never know what is going to be coming up on this show. Anyway, I will leave you with a tune, and this is going to be the one that started it all for me. Here it is from Hot Water Music, Turnstile on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love, and we'll see you next week.
Raise your lights and twist. Find your meaning and use the signs inside to relive and live again. What are you holding back on what you're holding? No matter if you shit or if you go in, balance your shift, let's finish your day. I'm a stone. sinner if you're going. Balance your ship until it's your day. We got up. We got up the fire. Hold on tight to your fears. Cause as you hate to hate. And as you know, you're not gonna lose all your fears. As if you
Yeah.